Lights, camera, action.
And the winner is...
Welcome back to the Oscar Reel Movie Podcast, where we discuss and review past, present, and potentially future Oscar-related movies. I am your Oscar know-it-all and movie-loving host, Matthew Schmidt, and I'm joined by my co-host and recently converted movie lover wife, Haley. Today we continue and are now halfway through our reviews of the most recent Best Picture nominees. Today we have, you might label them the surprise nominees. We have Nightmare Alley, the latest from Academy Award winning director Guillermo del Toro, which is a noir adaptation of the 1946 book of the same title about a carny who tries making it on his own as a mentalist. Also, we have the Netflix original and latest from Adam McKay, Don't Look Up. Imagine a giant comet was hurtling towards Earth and the world's scientists stand around watching stupid-ass people in charge of everything fumble through decisions. Yeah, it's as frustrating as it sounds, but I think it's pretty hilarious too. Now, as far as Oscars go, I would say neither are favorites to really win anything big. Maybe Nightmare Alley wins a technical award, and while Don't Look Up screenplay is clever and hilarious, I don't think it really has a chance to take home the gold. But I would say both movies have their faults, but bright spots as well. So listen in, see what we thought of them, and whether we think they should have been nominated or not. All right, on with the reviews.
All right, the next Best Picture nominee that we're discussing here is Nightmare Alley, the latest from Guillermo del Toro, directed by, and he did the screenplay too.
He usually does, but yes, I'm pretty sure he at least co-did it. First movie since The Shape of Water that he directed.
Okay. What about Roma? When was that? Was that before?
Well, that's Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, that's right.
Different. Are they both Mexican, or are they one Spanish? Because there was a run of Best Director winners that were Mexican, right? I know Alfonso Cuarón is, and then Guillermo and Alfonso won twice with Gravity and Roma, and then Shape of Water with Guillermo. There's a third.
You're thinking of Alejandro Iñárritu.
Who won twice for Birdman and the Red. He's Mexican too.
Oh, he is. Yeah, yes, no, you're right.
That's what I mean. It was a run of.
Like, I didn't think he was, but you're right.
It was a run of like five movies out of those three guys. Yep. So, yeah, there you go.
Yes. Okay. I'm like, oh, where? That was a beautiful tangent right off the bat. I love that. Okay. Guillermo del Toro wrote it, directed it. Our cast here, we've got Bradley Cooper, Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara. All these people have weird names, and honestly, I don't remember anyone being called by their name that often, except for Rooney Mara's character.
Oh, character names.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I thought you mentioned their real names in general, and I was like, every name's weird if you really think about
No, all the character names are just a little bit strange. Yeah, Bradley Cooper's character is Stanton Carlisle. Mm-hmm. Cate Blanchett plays Lilith Ritter. Rooney Mara plays Molly Cahill, which is not that weird. We've got Richard Jenkins, who plays Ezra Grindle, Toni Collette, Xena the Seer, Willem Dafoe as Clem. There's a few
Ron
others
Perlman,
in here as well.
Bruno.
Yep, Ron Perlman's in this for a bit. David Strathairn and Holt McCallany from Mindhunter. Love that show. So had to keep him in here.
They're all carnies. They gotta have weird names, you know?
It's totally true.
And then Ezra Grindle sounds like a character from Harry. It's like a
100%. Yep, I agree. The budget for this movie was $60 million box office. As with a lot of our nominees this year, limited theatrical release. This has managed to pull in almost $37 million at the box office thus far.
Is it just a pandemic thing? Is that we're chalking it up to?
As far as like limited release.
Well, I mean, this got a full theatrical release.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Okay. Like mistake.
It's just streaming now on Hulu and I think HBO.
Yeah.
But it got a full release.
My okay, I thought it was like just a streaming release. With a little bit. Okay,
good. Still in theaters now. We could go see it.
I was gonna say I did see that it's showing here, just outside Madison, but
because like Belfast got like as full of a release as a kind of smaller indie-ish movie can get. You know, but like box office is it just a pandemic thing? Is it just the new way? I don't know. But yeah, not a lot of these movies have made a lot of money,
right?
Which will be a continuing theme, I think, for the movies after this too, minus one, maybe.
Yeah. As far as award season goes, is this correct? They didn't have any Golden Globe nominations.
Zero.
As far as the Screen Actors Guild, only nominee came for Kate Blanchett, supporting actress. As far as the Oscars go, we've got four nominations. Best Picture, which is why we're talking about it here. Cinematography, costume design, and production design. A little bit more on the technical side.
Which I mean, the movie looks fantastic. You know, I mean, most Guillermo movies kind of have that similar vibe, darker tint vibe to it. So, no, like, I mean, and costumes, great. Like, it's kind of a period, like, it takes place in the
30s?
It's based on a 1946 novel. So, I assume it's kind of set around that time. Oh, 1939. So, yeah. You know, costume design makes sense. Set in, like, you know, well in the past. So, I get it. So, all the technical stuff I get.
Yeah.
The Best Picture nominee, I mean, we'll get into it, but a little bit surprised by it, I guess, in my opinion. But
you know, one thing, talking about production design, we'll get into this a little bit more as we talk about like our favorite parts of the movie, what worked, what didn't. But you kind of have these two halves where you've got this carny life but also this more opulent lifestyle. So you're right, production design kind of hits the mark with both of those.
Yeah, there's some interesting, like, Kate Blanchett plays a shrink, and her office is insane.
Unreal.
There's no way that a person ever had an office that actually looked like that. But the production is crazy on it.
Yeah. Let's see. As far as ratings, IMDb, it's currently at 7.1. Rotten Tomatoes is 80% critic and lower, 68% audience score.
Yeah, which I think kind of, you know,
surprises me a little bit.
A little. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess, like, that the audience is so low. Is that what you're surprised by?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or just lower than, like, that much of a difference between the critic score.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're going to talk about another movie with a big difference later on. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, we'll get into it.
70 currently.
Which is on par with most of the movies that we've reviewed so far for Best Picture. And definitely, like, that coincides more with the critic response than the audience response for Rotten Tomatoes. All right. Are you ready for some Nightmare Alley trivia? I didn't have a fun pun there.
Okay, I'm like, what are we? Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, hit me with some trivia. Okay. I've got some stuff, too. Let's share our fun knowledge.
Sharing is caring. All right, let's go. So no shocker here. Production was suspended because of COVID, but Rooney Mara was pregnant in the first half of production, gave birth during the break, which actually worked out because the second half of the film was filmed first when she is, I don't know, like, clothed more. And then the first half of the movie was filmed second, and that's when she's kind of performing in the carnival more and is in, you know, more, she's got more skin showing, we'll put it that way. So it kind of worked out for her. We'll talk about it, but geeks were real things. I thought maybe they were a made up thing. They are not, so be prepared for that story. Leonardo DiCaprio was originally cast in Bradley Cooper's part, but obviously, like, dropped out at some part or at some point. This is based, I mentioned it, it's based on a book, but this was also a 1947 film of the same title. Guillermo del Toro is saying this is not a remake, but it's a re-adaption of the book. I mean, it's a remake. Like, that's just his way of saying he never saw the 1947 movie. He just based it all on the book, technically, right? But, like, there was a movie made about this already. And the story goes, he got the book as a gift from Ron Perlman in 92, because Ron Perlman's in every Guillermo del Toro movie.
Yeah.
I think this was
like their seventh film, I think, sure. I had seen.
I mean, both the Hellboys.
Don't quote me on that, but I want to say that.
I mean, you could be right. I mean, you got both the Hellboys, and I mean, the ones off the top of my head, that one and the Pacific Rim. I don't know if he was in Shape of Water, but yeah, I mean, he's in Blade 2. He's in a lot of his movies, so seven, I totally believe that. But yeah, so the book was a gift from Perlman in 92, and then started adapting it, stating it's impossible to do the entire book because it's a saga. So I guess this movie is two just parts of the book. I didn't really look into too much of the full scale of what the book's about, but yeah, if that's true, that makes a little sense to me, and you know, it goes into some of my criticism of the movie. But Romana Power, who's the daughter of the lead actor of the 1947 version of this movie, like he was Stan in the 47 version, his daughter had a cameo in this film.
Oh.
This is one of the first Del Toro movies to feature no supernatural elements. Like, there's usually magic, something like a creature, a monster, something like that going on.
Yeah.
That surprised me a little based on the nature of, like, the carnival. Like, you could have easily just had it be more fantastical, but he chose not to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned this while we were watching the movie, but Desplat, am I saying that name right?
I think so. It's French. I'm not good at pronouncing French names.
It's not American. I'm not good at it. So. But he does a lot of Del Toro's movies, and he was originally supposed to do this, but had to leave for scheduling reasons. And you brought that up when we were listening to the music. You're like, did he do this? Because he did Shape of Water.
Yeah.
He didn't, but he was supposed to. And going in with our second review of the episode, both Cate Blanchett and Ron Perlman are in this and Don't Look Up, which are both nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, definitely planned that out. Didn't happen by accident at all. When towards the end of the movie, Stan, Bradley Cooper's character, is on a train that's full of chickens. He falls on his back, and it's framed like the Hanging Man in the, what's the card called? Like
the tarot cards?
Tarot cards, which he gets read that card to him like earlier in the movie. Ooh. So it's framed the same way.
Did not catch that. Oh, I like those little things.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
Yep.
You know, if we go back to Rooney Mara having her baby, do you know who she's currently engaged to?
Nope.
Do you know if they've been together since 2016?
Is it someone she was in a movie with? It's not Jesse Eisenberg, is it?
No.
Oh, okay. That would have been very random. No, I don't know.
They named their baby boy River after his late brother.
Joaquin. Phoenix. I did know that. No, I did.
Rooney Mara and Joaquin Phoenix. I had no idea.
I think I knew that only because, like, when he won the Oscar, I think I remember them together
it's
a lot.
It's funny because when I was looking into it, I did see a picture of them. And I'm like, okay, I know I've seen them.
That's right. It's very weird to me.
On the red carpet, but
there's got to be an age difference. What's the age difference there?
I don't know. I mean, she is probably a little older than you think, though. Because
true.
But yeah.
So Rooney,
figure that out.
Rooney Mara is 36. Joaquin.
I'm gonna say he's like
44. 47.
Ooh, okay.
So 11 years?
Yeah.
I guess it's not the worst thing in the world. But
no.
Okay.
Yeah. So I found that fascinating. One thing that was kind of cool too, I mean, not cool, but because it's based on somewhat of a tragedy, but I always like it when people have good reasons or whatever to like kind of put their personal spin on this story. Guillermo del Toro said that his father had actually been kidnapped when they were living in Mexico. And one of the first things that the investigator said, don't let the psychics get to you, because they love preying on people who are vulnerable, which is what starts to happen in this movie. So he kind of drew on those personal experiences to kind of like develop Bradley Cooper's character a little further.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. It's always interesting when you bring in your, you know, we reviewed Belfast. That's a very personal story. It's always interesting when you bring personal experiences or things into the movie. I mean, it usually makes it better. But yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he had kind of a firsthand account. He mentioned some situation where like he came home and his mom is like way roped into these psychics and here's where your husband is, and he's like, oh my gosh, like, mom, no, you can't. So interesting how he was able to pull on that firsthand experience to put a little spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Non-spoiler thoughts. Who wants to go for? I'll go first. So overall, I think this was a good to very good movie. I didn't think it was amazing. I thought it was too long. It's like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Something along that. It's a noir-ish film, right? Like it's a darker tone, but it's got that like noir feel to it. And I just felt like it was maybe a little too long, which is funny because Guillermo said he couldn't adapt the whole book because it's a saga. I really like the first half. The first half is this Stan, Bradley Cooper's character, just wandering into this carnival and learning kind of the backstage things of it, like how things work. He's meeting all these different people. I thought that was really fascinating, just how he was learning how different things work, and he was honing in on his craft and what he wanted to do. I really liked that. I actually liked it more in the second half, but the second half, it just felt like two different movies to me. And maybe that comes from Guillermo, like, not doing the whole book and just maybe he'd pick two sections of it or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the second half, there's a little bit of a time jump and it just felt a little less fluid or connected to me. I don't know. Like, it just, I didn't enjoy it as much over, like, at the end of the day, I just didn't enjoy it that much. Bradley Cooper was, like, good. You know, there were thoughts that he was going to get an Oscar nomination for this. I mean, he's good in it. It's a roller coaster of emotions for him, so I get it. I think the best part of the movie, to me, was Willem Dafoe, and he was really only in the first half of it. But he just, I mean, he's just going 100% in everything he does. You know, he came back as the Goblin and Spider-Man, and he's just chewing up the scenery again. He's just going full boat in this role again, too. He's just he's just awesome. Like, I just love Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
So, and because it's noir, a lot of noir movies have a femme fatale character, which is, you know, fatal female. So it's usually like a female who double crosses a character. So I saw it coming, like, kind of the end of this movie coming a little bit. Not to get too spoilery there, but yeah, overall, I thought it was good. I'm surprised it's nominated for Best Picture. I don't know if they're just kind of riding like the Guillermo del Toro train, like Shape of Water won Best Picture. That was the last movie he did. Like, everything he can't do no wrong. I don't know if it's just recency bias for him. And it's just like, oh, he did this movie and it's a noir take and it's got all these good actors in it and it's decent. Here's the Best Picture nomination. I don't know if that's what happened, but you know, that's just how I felt with it. It's still good. It's an 8.1 for me, but it is so far, you know, not to give away my score for the next movie we're reviewing, it is my lowest score out of the Best Picture nominees that we've seen so far.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about whether this has kind of earned its spot as a Best Picture nominee, I just feel like all of the movie, because we've seen most of them now, they're all good. None of them stand out to me as like fantastic. So yeah. I feel like there's just the Academy probably had like a tough time. Like, where do we draw that line? Like, there's no clear, like, super high echelon.
Yeah, and I think this is the first year where they said they are just doing 10. Because it used to be up to 10, so they could.
Now they're back to just straight up 10.
Well, it used to be 5.
Yes.
It was never just straight up 10, except maybe back in the 30s or 40s.
Okay.
But it was.
I thought it was, like it had to be 10.
No, period. No. I'm pretty sure, maybe you're right. I'm pretty sure, though, that up until 08 or whenever that was, it was 5. And then, like, in 09 or 2010, it was just up to 10.
I thought they did it for, like, 2 years or something. And people are like, this is dumb. They're like, okay, we can do up to 10.
I mean, maybe I just assume those first couple of years, they're like, oh, we can do up to 10. Let's just do 10.
Let's just do it.
So maybe, I mean,
yeah.
So and they pulled it back a little bit. But I'm pretty sure this is the first year where it's like 10, no matter what, not up to 10. So yeah, maybe you are seeing kind of that, I don't want to say bottom of the barrel because this is still a good movie, but yeah, maybe you're starting to scrape the ones that aren't too worthy. Like this only has 4. I mean, Coda only had 3, and I think that's better than this, so it's maybe not the best example, but this only has 4 nominations, and it's a bunch of technical ones, and then bam, Best Picture. So I felt like it was kind of just thrown in there. But no, I'm with you. Like all the movies we've rated so far have all been in that mid to high 8s for me.
Yeah.
And then this one's like lower at 8.1. Nothing is like, oh, this is like a 9 point whatever, at least so far in the reviews. And it has to win Best Picture or it's amazing. Usually we get 2 or 3 of those. And this is, I do think these movies are better than last year, which is good, but not, you haven't hit like the 2 or 3 home runs yet, at least.
Yeah.
And the best comparison I can think of for this is it reminds me of War Horse in the 2010s or late 2000s.
That's Steven Spielberg
movie? Yeah. I feel like that was a movie where I watched him like, yeah, it was good. It was fine. And then it got a Best Picture nomination. I just went, well, that just got a nomination because Spielberg's name is on it. Yes. And that's how I feel like for this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah. And then, I mean, other comparisons I had, this is going to sound weird. It reminded me a lot of Barry Lyndon, but a noir. And what I mean is Barry Lyndon is like 2 different movies to me.
Yes.
The first half, he's this lovable kind of character. And then, bam, there's a time jump, and he's, like, the worst human in the world. And I feel like that's very similar to this with Bradley Cooper. Like, the first half, he's kind of...
It's, like, 2 separate characters.
Yeah, almost. He's, like, kind of a lovable, like, oh, he's just learning things, being the nice guy. And then the second half, he's, like, this shitty, terrible person. So that, I mean, so it's, like, a mixture of Barry Lyndon and The Prestige or something like that. But that's kind of my comparison if you're maybe fans of movies like that, like maybe you'll like this, but yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, as far as my general thoughts, I think the first half when he's in the carnival scenes, what's enjoyable in that part for me is that it's a little more unpredictable. You know, I feel like the multitude of characters, like, they all have kind of an equal role in it. Everyone's kind of trying to figure out where they are. And then the second half, it's just, it feels very cut and dry. Like you said, you kind of expect that femme fatale and it's just, you can see where it's going. There was still a surprise at the end for me, but I liked the first half more, which is weird because I'm carny stuff like weirds me out.
Yeah, well, I mean, this movie didn't help that. So it was very like, you know,
it was horror, definitely a like, darker side like of
horror
it.
Aspects of yeah. Carney stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe I liked it more because it was I said the geek stuff is true. I don't even know if a lot of stuff is true, but it was, I felt like I was learning stuff, like when Willem Dafoe explains like how he turns someone into a geek. I'm like, oh, that's fucking creepy and twisted, but I get it. Like, it makes sense. Or David Strathairn plays a former mentalist that kind of acts as a father-ish figure to Bradley Cooper's character. And he kind of teaches him the ropes, and you learn a couple tricks of the trade. Yeah. So I felt like I was learning some things, whereas in the second half, it was just, like kind of what you said, like, a little more predictable or just paint by number on, like, this is happening, X is happening, there's less things that you were learning or surprises happening. So yeah, I totally buy into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that's fascinating about these like carnivals, or you think of like, you know, Barnum and Bailey, like the circus and stuff, it's crazy what people entertained by back then, because you think like, oh, this geek, like that's kind of weird and gross, but also, you know, just like people who were super strong was something that was appealing. Yeah, people who had tattoos was
bearded
like
woman.
Crazy. You know, it's interesting what people thought was
freak.
Yeah.
If it doesn't look like you, you know, type thing, which was an issue. Like, I know The Greatest Showman is like a more fantastical, but like P.T. Barnum like sucked as a person.
Yes. Yes.
So,
and how he exploited
others,
people that are considered other than.
Yeah. So
outside of a typical
carnivals are scary shit back then. Like, the stuff that happened back then that I assume is just terrible. Like, I don't know. Like, I haven't researched carnivals from the 30s or 40s too much, but I feel like they had this glossy look on them in Hollywood, like the greatest show on earth. You know, it's like, oh, these people, they dance. Oh, they're different, but they're a family.
Look, and they're training with animals. How sweet.
But then I think about it, and I'm just like, it's probably closer to this. Like, probably closer to Nightmare Alley, because, like, they were probably forcing people to do a bunch of shitty things that they didn't want to do, but they had no other choice.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, it's gross. You know? Not a fan. Like, what's the old, like, oh, I'm going to run away to the carnival, like, isn't that, like, a kid's like, no, don't do it. Run don't away do to it. The
circus. Exactly.
Don't do it. It's not great.
You gave your score. I give this an 8.1.
We had the same score.
Did you have an 8.1?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there you go. We agreed. That doesn't happen very often with our scores.
No, on the adjusted scale, I liked it a lot less than you did.
Yes. Then. Yes. No, that's exactly
we have the works. Same score, but that number is like lower for me than it is for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Any other non-spoilery thoughts before we run through the plot of the movie real quick?
Nah.
I don't spoil things. Name me one thing that I've actually spoiled.
All right. So, spoilers. So, we're going to talk through the movie real quick. So, it actually opens with Cooper's character. What's his name? Stan. He's putting a body in the floorboards of a rundown home and then sets the home on fire and just walks away, gets on a bus. Then he wanders into a carnival. He's like, oh, last stop. And he's doesn't know where else to go. He wanders into a carnival and starts working part time, tries learning as much as he can on the secrets of all the acts. And then eventually starts offering up advice on how to maybe improve the acts. That's when him and Rooney Mara start connecting a little bit more. You know, he like kind of elevates her show a little bit. And Ron Perlman is in the carnival too, and he's kind of a father figure to Rooney Mara and is like overly protective of her. So he's not a fan of Bradley Cooper, but yeah, that's kind of, he's in this more than how I'm explaining it, but that's who Ron Perlman's character is at least.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bradley Cooper himself develops like a father, like I said, in David Strathairn, who's a former mentalist, but he's an alcoholic. And is always, you know, he's married, I think, to Toni Collette's character, who's kind of the mother figure of the carnival. And she's the one with the tarot cards. So she, you know, gives Bradley Cooper a reading and reveals the Hanging Man. But David Strathairn is always just bumming booze off of people, usually Willem Dafoe, whose character is fucking twisted. He's in charge of probably more things of this, but like the geek, which is... The carnival presents it as like a creature who eats chickens, I guess, or animals.
Yeah.
And what it is a homeless person that Willem Dafoe like gets addicted to. What drug is it? Opium? Or, maybe
so
it's opium.
Yeah, he would lace alcohol with opium, so they get to a point where it's like they're addicted to it, like they can't.
Yeah, and then
live without it.
And then he tells them like you have to eat. Live chickens for me to like, oh, it's so gross.
Yeah.
It's fucking terrible. My God. And they have to get a new geek because like this one like dies. Like he gets loose and then Bradley Cooper, when he catches him, hits him in the head, and then eventually the head injury just causes him to die. And they just drop the body off
just leave him.
In an alley. And it's just creepy as hell. And Willem Dafoe shows Bradley Cooper where he's keeping the booze, and it's like two separate containers. One is for like cleaning and it would kill you if you drank, and the other one's for recreation. So that's the one David Strathairn's always trying to bum off of people, who eventually he dies. And he dies when he asks Bradley Cooper for alcohol, and Cooper goes gets him one, and then David Strathairn is just dead the next day, and Cooper steals his like book of the trades. So my question to you is, did he kill him on purpose? Like, what did you think? Did you think he just died of alcohol, or did Did Bradley Cooper do that on purpose? Did that thought ever cross your mind that he did it on purpose?
It did cross my mind they did it on purpose. But the way they, because if I recall correctly, they show Bradley Cooper like grabbing the bottle. And I feel like when directors, writers, whoever want you to feel a certain, like if the message was, let's get the audience to question whether or not Bradley Cooper did this on purpose, I feel like they would linger on the bottle a little more, or they'd show him hesitating for just a moment. The fact that he just like went right up, just grabbed it, gave it to him, gives me the impression that he didn't do it intentionally. Mm-hmm. But it works out to his advantage.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if he did on purpose.
And that's where I haven't seen the original movie or read the book or anything. I feel like that was something that could have been played with a little bit more.
Yeah.
Is, was this done on purpose? Because it was just, got him a bottle, gave it to him, and they never really came back to that. Like, Mm-mm. Is that something that like waned on his mind down the road or anything?
Could be. I don't know.
But you're right.
And maybe that kind of plays into the ending a little bit. We don't need to jump that far ahead, but that may impact Stan's decision at the end. Who knows?
Yes, I don't know. But I thought that was something that could have been played up more, but just wasn't.
That's a good point.
So anyway, so after that happens, Bradley Cooper decides he wants to start his own show. He thinks he's the shit. He's the man.
He thinks he's the best.
The dude.
Mentalist.
So him and Rooney Mara, who are in love, like run off together and start their own show. And that's like halfway-ish through the movie. There's a time jump 2 years later, and they're just performing for like rich white people in rooms and like
clubs, yeah.
Stuff like that. Cooper and Mara are fighting like all the time. He's like, "Oh, you did this wrong," because her whole job is she says specific words to cue him on things. So it's, you know, you can't tell what's going on.
Yeah, so it seems like he's actually reading their minds.
Yeah. So, you know, she is messing up a little bit, I guess. So he's always pissed off at her. So he keeps doing his act. Cate Blanchett's in the audience for a couple in a row. And then he performs what I think Toni Collette's character called a spook show in the movie, which is he pretends to, like, talk to the dead for this old man. Like, mm-hmm. He pretends to do it. And her character, like, would do that every once in a while, but to like bail out of an act that she like wasn't doing great on, Toni mm-hmm. Collette's would. And then she would always go up to that person and be like, "I was lying. Like, I'm sorry. I can't string you along. I can't talk to the dead. I was lying for the show and I'm sorry."
Yeah.
And she said, "It sucks, but you just always have to tell the truth. Otherwise, like, you're ruining these people's lives."
Mm-hmm.
So he does this. He's like kind of caught in an act that isn't going great, so he does like a spook show and pretends he's talking to this old man's, I think, son ultimately is who it is, because it's, you know, the old trick where you kind of say a vague question and they fill in the answer for you.
Yeah.
So I think it's his son, and then afterwards he does not tell him that he was lying. He like doubles down on the lie.
Yep.
And then performs like a private showing for this guy, and then, you know, nails it again. And then after that, this guy says that he wants to introduce him to a friend of his, who ends up being Richard Jenkins, who is like a paranoid rich white dude who lost his daughter and wants to talk to his daughter, and apparently has gone through many mentalists before and has outed all of them as to being fake and ruined their lives. But he's like, "No, I'm up for the challenge. I'm going to do this." So he does. Turns out Richard Jenkins' character was a patient of Cate Blanchett. So they start, Bradley Cooper and her start working together. Like, she feeds him info on Richard Jenkins to kind of get the confidence up. Holt from Mindhunter is a bodyguard for Richard Jenkins, but like admires him, you know, thinks he's a great person, does not like him when people take advantage of him. But Jenkins is a crazy person.
He is
insane. And
it's like crazy versus crazy.
Yeah.
Versus crazy.
There's a lot of crazy in this.
Yeah.
And meanwhile,
I was going to say in the second half, but there is in the first half. There's just a lot of crazy.
For sure is in the first half too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Cooper, when he talks with Blanchett, she kind of diagnoses him, has sessions with him on the side that he doesn't necessarily like, but she's kind of, you know, getting in his head a little bit too. But it all kind of comes to an head at the end when Stan Bradley Cooper asks Rooney Mara to like dress up as Richard Jenkins' daughter. And then, because Richard Jenkins is like, you need to materialize my daughter. I'm sick of this shit. I've been paying you all this money. Materialize my daughter. I want to talk to her. So he asks Rooney Mara to dress like her. And he's like, don't worry. Like, you won't get too close. Everything will be fine. It'll work out.
He'll see you from a far enough distance. We'll do it at night. He won't be able to notice that it's not his actual daughter.
Yeah. Guess what? Goes terribly. And does Cooper kill him? He beats the shit out of him.
Yes.
Like, his nose looks caved in. I don't know. I can't remember if it's, like, dead or if it's just beating the shit out of.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Holt
definitely kills, the bodyguard.
Yep. Holt comes after him, runs him over, kills him. You know, Rooney Mara leaves Stan, runs off.
And she wanted to leave way before this.
Oh, yeah. She's like, this is the last
straw. She even chickened out, right as they pulled up.
Well, it sucks, too. She leaves him a note saying, like, I'll be already on a bus. But then he just gets to the bus station and cuts her off. I'm like, you couldn't have planned this out better? Like, and that's one of those things, like, the second half of this is a little more boring, where it's like she leaves a note saying that she's leaving him and going to the bus station. Well, he just gets to the bus station before she leaves. Like, there's no drama there. She couldn't have lied in her note and said she was going to the train station instead? And then she goes to the bus station?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You didn't have to be truthful with him.
So, really, like, that was weird for whatever reason, but but then, Bradley Cooper goes to Kate Blanchett to, like, collect the money. She shoots him reveals that she isn't on his side. I have questions about that in a second. Shoots him. He gets away but becomes homeless and a drunk. And this whole movie, he's like, I don't drink.
Right.
I don't drink. Like, three-fourths of the movie, he doesn't drink. But then he just starts doing it at one point. I can't remember what drives him to do it.
Kate Blanchett hands him, like, a glass, and he takes like one sip, and then from like that point on
he's just drinking all the time.
Yeah,
so he becomes a drunk and a homeless person, and then goes to the carnival to try to get a job as a mentalist. Willem Dafoe isn't there anymore. It's who's the from Holes.
It's Tim Blake Nelson's
there, and then does the old, like, Bradley Cooper, like, Stan knows this trick because Willem Dafoe told it to him. But Tim Blake Nelson does the old, I'm going to turn this homeless guy into a geek trick by offering up
temporary. It's a temporary position. Got a temporary job for you. Here, let's celebrate with a little drink.
And then Bradley Cooper just laughs maniacally and says, yes, Ben, this is the job for me.
Mm-hmm. Takes that shot of opium-laced.
Yeah.
Booze.
And then it ends. And I actually like the ending.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like the full circle, like, he becomes the geek aspect of it. It was just stuff before it that I don't love. So where do we want to start with talking about it? We already talked about the creepy geek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else, like, in the carnival in the first half of the movie that you wanted to touch on?
No, I don't think so.
Some of the shows were kind of cool, like Rooney Mara's the whole electrical lady, like she's got electricity running through her veins or whatever, which was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first half is very good. I don't have a lot of, like, issues with that. But I guess in the second half, I don't get, like, what's Bradley, like, is his motivation just ego? Is that just what
that's my thought.
Because does this?
Like, he doesn't really have anything to prove to anyone. I mean, I guess we find out that he, like, hates his dad.
Yeah. So that's one thing. The body at the beginning was his dad. They finally show the full story at the end, which is he just hated his dad, which is kind of a lame. I don't want to say lame, but like. But
we didn't know why he hated his dad. Like, what was the story there? So, I mean, I feel like that's an easy way to, like, give someone motivation. Oh, you've got daddy issues.
Well, that's what I meant by, like, when I said lame, I was trying to think of a better way to say it. Maybe lackluster is, you know, oh, he hated his dad. He had daddy issues. Like, that's, like, that's the big reveal of the dead body. I could have probably guessed that. Like, yeah. You know, like there isn't anything crazy. Like it wasn't like a former, like a wife or some crazy or something that connected him to different character.
Someone who wronged him in business. Now he feels the need to like
prove himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and maybe he's trying to prove himself to his dad, but it just felt a little lackluster with that twist. But yeah, so is his motivation just ego? Because, you know, he's collecting money from Richard Jenkins, but he's just giving it to Kate Blanchett to keep her safe.
Yeah.
And so he isn't spending it. I know he goes to collect it at one point. But when he's coming up with this plan for Rooney Mara to dress up like the daughter, I'm just, what are we doing here?
Oh, I know. Honestly, when he first meets Richard Jenkins, like, you can just tell that he's, like, way in over his head.
Yeah, he hooks him up to a polygraph, and he's, you know, it's failing it.
Actually one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. It was an interesting scene.
Yeah, so like you had said earlier, Richard Jenkins, like, he wants to vet out everyone, right? So it's like, talk to him for a little bit, and then, okay, we'll hook you up to a polygraph machine. And of course, you know, they're asking him questions like, are you a mentalist? Can you speak to the dead? You know, shit like that. That he's, as he's answering, the machine is just spiking because he's lying out of his ass. But I actually thought this was a good moment where you kind of saw some of the like cunning side of Bradley Cooper, when he like almost starts going into a reading at that point, because he's already gotten some dirt on this guy from Kate Blanchett, and so he's just like throwing it out there like, oh well, wait, you had a daughter, this was this her name, you know? And so it's like, one, it like calms him down. So the polygraph thing like levels out, but then people just get distracted and the guy's just impressed with it anyway. So I don't think they even, like, clearly they don't even care how that polygraph like went, because he's just like sucked into it anyway. But
yeah, no, that's fair. But yeah, so when he's coming up with this plan with Rooney Mara, I'm just like, what are we doing here? Because but he's like, don't worry, he's not going to touch you, he's going to be far away. But then he just immediately runs up to her, and Bradley Cooper doesn't stop him. Like, well, that plan failed instantly. Like, well, what do we do? Too,
like, if this guy is like, oh, cool, I've seen my daughter, like, this is all the closure that I need. Like what happens with their relationship once that's done? Like, is he going to want to continue to see his daughter? Is he going to want to continue this relationship with Bradley Cooper? Like, clearly,
seemed like it was going to be the end, I guess. Like, you just want to, because it turns out, oh, Richard Jenkins is like a shitty person who, like, he tortured people, right? Like, it was like women, like, he like hurt women. He's like, when he was confessing to Rooney Mara, when he thought she was his daughter, he was like, you know, I hurt many women afterwards or something like that.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And paid for an abortion or something.
Yeah.
So like, he's a terrible person. And that kind of goes into my other question, which is like, what was Kate Blanchett's character's motivation? Like, why did she double cross Bradley Cooper? Because she's a shrink, and then she just like kind of shoots him and betrays him for a reason that I couldn't tell you what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. And I can't answer that right now either.
And at one point, she shows him a scar that she has.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe she was like one of the women that Richard Jenkins' character hurt.
I didn't even tie that together. Could have been.
But that's the thing. Like, you didn't even tie it together.
No.
It was never explicitly said. It was just all of a sudden she shoots him, and I don't know why. Because he was a patient of hers. So I don't know if she was just trying to, Richard Jenkins' character was a patient of Kate Blanchett. So yeah, I don't know if she was trying to get payback on him, but yeah, it was just weird. I didn't really understand her motivation there. Yeah, I don't know. And you mentioned your favorite scene. I guess, like I've mentioned in general, the first half is my favorite scene. I guess I really liked it. At one point, the carnival's getting shut down by the police. And this is when Stan puts his mentalist powers skills into play for the first time. He takes the sheriff aside and starts doing like reading, you know, doing a reading on him, like, oh, you've lost this person, or I'm getting this reading. He basically does a reading on him and gets the carnival off the hook because the sheriff believed him. And I liked it because he then kind of explained how he did it. Like, he grabbed the warrant from a cop when they first came storming in, and he looked at the warrant and saw the cop's name and, like, saw all this information on it and then used that information for his reading. Like, that was a case of, oh, he's using, like, observant skills to do this, and I really like that.
Yep.
So that was probably one of my favorite scenes, if not my favorite. But the ending was good. The whole full circle of, oh, Bradley Cooper is just a geek now. Like, this is a his character probably deserves to be in that spot, but just what a shitty way to end up.
Uh-huh.
Anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, overall pretty good. I wouldn't, you know, I feel like it snuck in there for a Best Picture nomination, but, you know, it was still a pretty good movie streaming on Hulu and HBO.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, like sitting down, because I think when we first watched this, it was nominated yet. Okay. But still, even then, I didn't watch it with a super, like, critical hat on, and I found it really enjoyable. As I started to think more about it so we could talk about it here, that's kind of when I started to nitpick it a little bit. So if you're looking for, you know, a visually appealing, gritty sort of movie, I think the average person would enjoy it.
No, I think, you know, you get to see the rise and fall of a person, which is, like, very compelling in movies. Yeah. You know, the first half is him learning everything and getting to the top of the mountain. And then obviously with the ending of this movie, you see the fall too. So, I mean, that's always really interesting and compelling too. So I think this is more palatable of a film for an average movie goer to see, even though it is like 2.5 hours long, but to see versus like a Belfast or a Power of the Dog, which maybe we enjoyed more, but this is probably easier for the average person to watch. So yeah, I hear you. So yeah, that's Nightmare Alley, the latest from Guillermo del Toro. It's streaming on Hulu and HBO, so check it out. All right, next in our Best Picture nominees is Netflix's Don't Look Up, directed by Adam McKay. So the guy who did, I mean, Talladega Nights, Anchorman, all that stuff. But this is more in line with his recent work, which was The Big Short and Vice. So this is, I don't think he's done anything directing-wise since Vice. So this is next up for him. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Meryl Streep, Kate Blanchett, Jonah Hill, Mark Rylance, Rob Morgan, Tyler Perry, Timothy Chalamet, Ron Perlman, Ariana Grande, and Kid Cudi.
Woo!
What a cast.
Right? How about this? If we just look at acting, this cast has a combined 41 Oscar nominations in the acting categories and, well, eight wins.
How many is Meryl Streep?
Well, you know, she's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Have you heard that story?
Oh, this sounds pretty. Yeah, like someone said it and she thought it was a literal
GOAT. Yeah, Jonah Hill kept referring to her as the GOAT. And she's like, hot, funny, okay? I get it. I'm old. Like, you don't have to put me down. Jennifer Lawrence like, no, he thinks you're the greatest of all time. And she's like, oh, okay, that's different.
I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is supposedly like the nicest person in the world, right? So she is it. What? Gosh. Who is it? Who's the clip where they? It's like another actress. It's them on the red carpet, and she like touches her on the shoulder, and then they turn heads and they like almost kiss each other like at the same time, and then it's like, oh my god, oh my god. Because, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is like, oh, the everyday normal person. She tripped on her way up to get her Oscar, you know.
It was fake. Ooh. She did it on purpose.
Yeah?
Yes.
You're 100%. On that side?
Yes.
You also think the Queen's been dead since last year? You a conspiracy theorist?
Not since last year. There's no way they would keep that under wraps for that long.
I mean, pandemic. You don't know. How many public? I mean, I actually have no idea if this is true, but like, has she done public appearances since?
I don't know. Probably.
I got.
But I don't know.
I gotta think.
But
so.
I don't think. in public, as in like video recorded addresses. I don't think she literally stepped out. I don't think that's happened in a very long time.
And she could be dead, because could easily just record those Prince happy Phillip's holiday things
funeral or something. But I haven't kept my tabs on the royals lately, so I don't know.
Okay. So yeah, giant cast for this movie. The budget was $75 million, which, I mean, look, compared to like a Vice, a little bit higher. Vice was 60. Box office, not too much, because this is a Netflix movie, so similar to Power of the Dog, it's had a limited release to just qualify for the award season, so it's $800,000 at the box office. But again, not designed, not, I know, right? Just seeing that number is just hilarious to see. So yeah, awards, Golden Globes, these are all in the comedy section, but it was nominated for 4. Best Picture, Actor for Leo, Actress for Jennifer Lawrence, and then Screenplay wasn't comedies. It was nominated for all of them, didn't win any. One SAG nomination for just cast, where it lost. And then 4 Academy Award nominations, a little bit bigger than the last movie we reviewed in Nightmare Alley. This is Best Picture, Film Editing, which is... oddly enough, this is going to sound crazy, that is a pretty decent precursor to what wins Best Picture. Like, I don't know the percentage, but there's actually a decent percentage of movies where, like, if it wins film editing, it's winning Best Picture too.
Mm-hmm.
Score, and then screenplay, original screenplay.
Yeah, nice.
So these are some big ones there. Here comes the ratings, though, from IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, and Metacritic. Have you seen these yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, let's get... What do you think IMDb rating is for this?
Mid-sevens? 4, maybe?
7.2.
Okay.
So, close. What do you think is the audience Rotten Tomato for this?
Oh, it's probably like 20%.
It's actually 78%.
Okay.
What do you think the critics...
I was way hedging that.
What do you think the critics rating is
maybe for this? The critics don't like it. I don't know.
55%. This is a rotten movie on Rotten Tomatoes.
And the critics, interesting. I thought the audience would be more. Of course, I don't know how Rotten Tomatoes works. Like IMDb, like people who disagree with viewpoints of movies just go on there and just shit all.
Oh,
over
they
it.
Do, which is amazing.
Without ever seeing it,
which is amazing. This is 7.2.
Yeah.
The Rotten Tomatoes used to be like that for the audience, at least. Which again, the audience score is actually like higher than the critics for this, so it's not the issue. But when Ghostbusters 2016 came out, like Rotten Tomatoes had to change their formula because people just went on and shit on it before seeing
it's
it.
It's a movie with women. We don't like it.
Turns out it's just maybe, and I know you might not agree, but it's just maybe not a good movie, but not because they're
not great.
They're good, not it's because fine. They're women. It's just because it wasn't a great movie. Anyways, 55%. A rotten movie nominated for Best Picture. Metacritic. Any guess?
I'm not good with Metacritic scores. Yeah.
So, like, this, everything we've been reviewing has been in the 70s.
Low 70s.
An 80 would be amazing for Metacritic, and a 90 is, like, phenomenal. So, it's a 49.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So, critics didn't like this, I guess.
The Academy did?
Yeah, but it got a Best Picture, like, you know, liberal Hollywood, I guess, is what people will say, you know. But, yeah, the consensus critic... on Rotten Tomatoes is Don't Look Up aims too high for its scattershot to consistently land, but Adam McKay's star-studded satire hits its target of collective denial square on. So whatever. I don't know. Rotten Tomatoes can be weird, where if someone just barely doesn't like it, it gets counted as like a negative score. You know what I mean? Like, it's on a scale. So it's not perfect, but still kind of, you know, to see a 55% nominee for Best Picture is interesting. But yeah, some quick trivia for this before we get into our general thoughts. Jennifer Lawrence lost a tooth, but this was...
Lost a veneer.
Oh, a veneer. Thank you. Yeah. But because it was COVID, couldn't get it replaced, so they CGI'd a tooth in post-production.
Nice.
Kind of funny.
Yep.
And then kind of alluding to what I talked about, is only the second widely reviewed movie on Rotten Tomatoes Rotten rating to receive a Best Picture nomination, the only other one being Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close back in 2011. Also, that is not a good movie. According to Adam McKay, Leonardo DiCaprio had a problem with Meryl Streep's nude scene. Spoiler alert. Even though it was a body double, quote, Leo views Meryl as film royalty. He didn't like seeing her with a lower back tattoo walking for a second naked.
Well, maybe that happened because Adam McKay supposedly wrote this script before COVID. And he kind of questioned, do I even make this movie? Because life is literally imitating art right now.
Yeah, right.
As far as like COVID deniers and shit. So he felt the need to make the movie even more ridiculous just to try to set it apart from everyday life.
Which is
so sad.
Yeah. It's true. Which, get into our general thoughts here. So yeah, this is like a giant metaphor for climate change, but then it kind of turns into a metaphor for COVID too, as you were just talking about. Do you know what parts he like made even crazier than it was before? Because this movie gradually gets kind of weirder and more outrageous, but it's satire. And I think that's the biggest thing people need to realize about it, is like, it's satire, but it is a very in your face metaphor.
I mean, he literally sat down with, I don't remember, but he was inspired by seeing like the UN Climate Council and like their report that said, hey, if temperature on the earth goes up 1.5 degrees Celsius, like, we're fucked. It's probably going to happen by 2030 and we're fucked. And he's like, why is no one talking about this? And he talked with one of the scientists on the panel. He's like, if we put it in different terms, there is an asteroid coming for Earth. And we're doing nothing about it. And boom. Movie idea.
Literally the movie.
Movie idea. So yeah. Like he consulted different scientists. And actually a woman who does exactly what Jennifer Lawrence's character does. As far as like tracking asteroids and stuff. So had some legit scientific counsel, which is cool.
No,
I always appreciate that shit.
The science. Well, here, I'll maybe talk about that really quick. Reception from scientists was pretty positive, especially from numerous climate scientists and communicators. Here's something from the Guardian. Climate scientist Peter Kalmus remarked, don't look up as satire, but speaking as a climate scientist doing everything I can do to wake people up and avoid planetary destruction, it's also the most accurate film about society's terrifying non-response to climate breakdown scene. I mean, that's more on not the science, but the response to society. But one of my favorite scenes is actually the beginning when they just discover the comet and they run through like how the math works in it. Like, that's all pretty accurate. And I know at one point Leo says, I think it's from the Oort cloud, and you were like, well, all asteroids are from the Oort cloud. Well,
at least as far as my college education from 10 years ago, let me know.
There isn't a ton of science in this because it's about a fake comet hitting Earth, but like the science that is in it, like, it was received pretty well.
It's good.
And then like what you were saying though, like what inspired Adam McKay, pretty much everyone says, yeah, this movie is like, obviously it's satire, but like, this is pretty true. Like, on how society,
this is the perfect metaphor for it. There is something that will literally kill our planet. We're doing virtually nothing about it.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'll say, like, I really liked this movie. Like, I liked it a lot. I thought it was hilarious, like, more than anything. Like, I could see this movie's gotta be like we're looking up the scores of it, like, fairly divisive. I don't really see a lot of people landing in the middle of this. You either are on the side of people aren't listening to science and maybe think this movie is hilarious, or you think this movie is just liberal Hollywood making a movie about something that isn't true and you think it's stupid. That's kind of how I'm viewing this. But I think it's really good. I think it's hilarious. I have a friend, college roommate, who asked me if I'd seen it. And I said, yeah. And he goes, this is maybe the best movie I've seen in like 5 years. And I have another friend in the same group chat who's like, my wife watched this for half an hour and couldn't stand it. But her thing wasn't, she doesn't believe in climate change. Her thing is, all of these characters are so insufferable. I just couldn't watch it anymore. Like, you get Meryl Streep as the president, and Jonah Hill is her chief of staff, and they're just some of the most
her son. Jonah Hill plays her son, who is her ill-appointed chief of staff.
Yeah, and when watching West Wing, it's kind of funny seeing this and just being like, "Oh, this is very different." But like, there's this movie is full. Like, I compare it, it's Armageddon, but if it was frustrating because it's this movie should end after 8 minutes because they do the math. The asteroid's going to hit the planet. They call, like, the head of NASA, who then confirms the math, and then they call one other person to confirm the math, and they all go, yeah, it's going to hit the planet in 6.5 months. That should be it. Like, end of movie, they do something to stop the asteroid. That's it. But no, this is full of a bunch of insufferable people who just use greed or just stupidity or whatever to just like stop things from happening. And it's hilarious to me along the way, but I can easily see how it's like frustrating for someone to watch this too. Yeah. But it's still got its Adam McKay-isms a little bit in it. Like, there's a couple times where, you know, it freezes the movie and it says something like, "Oh, this department is real." Like, Rob Morgan's the head of like some planetary something department that sounds fake as shit. But then it like pauses and be like, "No, this is a real, here's their logo." Leo's like good in it. He plays kind of a neurotic ish scientist, like nothing crazy out of the box, but like he's still good in it. Jennifer Lawrence maybe better. She's like, I mean,
definitely
you right, yeah, like she's recognizable, but I still had people be like, "Oh, it took me like 10 minutes to realize that was her." Like, she's got the nose piercing and dyed hair. Like I said, to me, didn't think it was overly crazy, but like she's still good in her role. But yeah, I think
she's my favorite character.
Yeah, I like her a lot in this especially, but this movie is more so, it other than Mark Rylance, it isn't who I think does a pretty good acting like performance in this. It isn't a movie where you're being wowed by the performances. It's more you're watching it to just see the situations that are happening, mm-hmm. and how
like you could outrageous plug in, it is. You could almost plug in anyone to these roles and it.
Yeah, I mean, it helps having Leo. Like, he's a great actor, so it helps. But yeah, it's more the situations they're put in.
Yeah, yeah. But I did really like Jennifer Lawrence's character. I think probably because she's the type of person that, like, I wish I was like that, where she's like, "This is the math. These are the facts, people. Like, hello, wake the fuck up." Whereas Leo's like, "Yeah, I mean, this is the math, but Kate Blanchett wants to sleep with me, so I'm going to do that for a while." How's that sound? "Oh, wait, my wife knows about this? Now I'm going to feel a little bad, I guess." But Jennifer Lawrence is straight up like, "I fucking hate you people. Listen to me."
Yeah, she's like the, quote, most normal person, I guess. So, yeah. Yeah, Adam McKay was just swinging for the fences on this. I feel it's like True Story, Big Short, True Story, Vice, asteroids hitting the planet. Don't Look Up. Like, he's really, and then he's doing Winning Time, which is like, oh, True Story again.
Yeah, that's right. So the Lakers.
Yeah, so show. This is like just swinging for the fence. Like, goddamn, he was going for it. But I think this is better than Vice. Like, it was at least more entertaining to me. Like, Vice was fascinating because it's like a true story, and like Christian Bale was amazing in that role. But like, I don't know, this was. Maybe it's because it was funnier, but I enjoyed is tough to say because right. It's frustrating, but it was a more enjoyable watch, I guess, for me.
Yeah. I may be one of those middle of the road people that you said. I don't know if there's many people who are middle of the road on this. I'm very middle of the road on this.
Okay.
And I would say I liked Vice better than this.
Okay.
Definitely like Big Short better
than this. Big Short. I mean, Big Short, I think, like, is like
pinnacle.
That's a
so
9.
Good. That movie's so rewatchable, and it's so stupid that something about financial crisis.
That's just amazing about it.
Which took away my college fund, and I can watch this, and I enjoy watching it. Sad. But I feel like on paper, I should really, really enjoy this movie, but I just don't. And I can't, I mean, I think part of it is that it's satire, but I still feel like some of the characters are like too unbelievable.
They push it a little too much.
Yes,
with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
to the point, and maybe this is kind of like, ugh, I can't watch it because these characters are insufferable. It never got to that point as far as like, I felt frustrated with them, but I'm just like, it felt like it was just a touch too far. And maybe that has to do with the fact that McKay was like, I gotta crank this up a notch so that it turns out to be a satire instead of a fucking documentary, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that has to do with it. I don't know. But if we're talking scores, I give this 7.8.
7.8?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 7.8.
That's higher. I thought you were just going to say 7. Like,
oh, no, okay. No. Not that low.
Okay. I give it an 8.6. So, okay. Like, you know, I like it a lot. And I guess I'm just like, comparatively to what I've seen some people say, like, I guess I liked it more than others. But no, I mean, that's great. I love hearing like why someone might be in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So, I totally get what you're saying. There are some characters and situations in this that are very outlandish.
Yeah.
And I guess I just, maybe I just think it's funnier than like how someone else, because comedy is subjective. Like, maybe it's just some people didn't view it as funny, so they weren't willing
I'm sorry, I felt like I was kind of off.
Well, it's just, so if you don't think it's as funny, maybe you're not letting yourself like have that suspension of disbelief. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're less willing to accept the crazy situation because of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I mean, probably too, I did have some sort of expectation as far as like comparing it to The Big Short or Vice. And this is like completely satirical. It's not based on real events. Like, I'm not in that standpoint, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, it's very different from those movies.
And so I think that probably hindered me a little bit too going into it. Like, oh, it's probably going to be like this, and it had certain feels of that for sure, but just probably wasn't quite what I was expecting, which expectations are the worst.
They are the worst. So I said my score 8.6.
Mm-hmm.
Final note or trivia here: Bong Joon-ho won an Oscar for Parasite. Included Don't Look Up as one of his favorite films of 2021.
Oh, so, nice. That's
so,
a winning.
So you disagree with Bong Joon-ho. You're not part of the Bong Hive.
Didn't say don't go see it. Don't watch
it. Is it one of your favorite movies of 2021?
Yeah, okay. No.
Boom. And then I mentioned my movie comparison is Armageddon, but frustrating. But with maybe better science, oddly enough, because Armageddon sent a bunch of drillers up into space. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
And while this movie is frustrating, like, maybe they had better ideas in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe.
maybe. Who knows?
You know, if I talk about one thing that maybe I didn't like, because I've already said I liked how Jennifer Lawrence, like, she sticks to her guns. I hate how Leo's like, yeah, and I'm the scientist, man. I'm the big deal here. I checked your work, Jennifer Lawrence, kind of thing. But then he's like, yeah, I also really like this, like, media attention, and I'm gonna do this. And I'm just like, no, you're dumb.
I think that's like, no, you're dumb. Well, I think that's like clearly on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Like, people getting caught up in fame and.
And like, he
and
wasn't caring. Wasn't he doing like stupid endorsements and like
commercials
and shit?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't spoil things. Name me one thing that I've actually spoiled.
All right. So we'll talk. We're in spoilers now. We'll talk through the movie a little bit. The opening scene is what's her name?
Oh my. Okay. Here is a little metaphor within the metaphor of the movie. This happens to her the entire time. Every single show that she's on, they can never pronounce her last name.
That's true.
And it's like, these people won't even take the time to learn how to say her last name. There's no way in hell they're going to listen to what she has to say.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. And running gag is whenever they go on a show, they're like, they know why we're here, right? And they always get it wrong. Like, oh, what's that planet you discovered? But
anyway. Yeah, that's right. They're like, what's the planet you discovered? No, it's a comet and it's going to impact Earth. We are going to die in 6.5 months.
Yep. So Kate DiBiase discovers the comet. And then I actually like, this might be one of my favorite scenes of the movie. It goes from a celebration of everyone partying, like, oh yeah, this is so awesome.
We found this new discovery.
And then Leo starts doing the math, and Jennifer Lawrence like, why does that number keep getting smaller? And then it gets to zero, and he erases it and starts freaking out.
Yeah.
And realizes it's all it's going to impact Earth. And then so they call, you know, NASA. They work their way up the chain. Eventually, they get to the White House. They're going to talk to him what's happening. And this, again, I think this is hilarious. But they get slow rolled for an entire day. Madam President walks by, and Jonah Hill is like, just give us 5 minutes. We're running into an issue. And then it's just continuous 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. And it's like, yeah, it's not going to happen today, guys. We're going to hook you up in a hotel room. Like, they just get slow rolled for an entire day.
And well, then that one guy charges them for the like bottles of water and snacks.
He's like, they charge an arm and a leg for these snacks. $10 each to do it. And then he leaves. And then he's a 5-star general, by the way.
Yeah.
He leaves. Kate DiBiase, Jennifer Lawrence goes and gets more snacks. She's like, where do I pay for these? And someone's just like, it's the fucking White House. They're free. So then the rest of the movie, it's like an ongoing thing. Rest of the movie, she's just like, why the fuck would a 5-star general charge us for snacks? And I think that's hilarious. I love that.
I think that was my favorite, like, recurring joke, yeah, is that she continues to be pissed off by that.
Like, they see that general later on in the movie. She's like, watch out for him. He's going to charge you for free shit.
Yes. Yes.
Fucking love it. But they eventually meet with the president, who has a picture of her with Steven Seagal on her desk, which is just a little nod to, like, the what type of woman, or not woman, just president, what type of president this is.
Well, and what also, this was something I forgot as I was kind of, like, refreshing myself. What former president's portrait does she have in the Oval Office? No other than Richard Nixon. You're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Why not? Clearly she's, like, a Trump kind of metaphor. I assume they never say what party she belongs to.
Right, right. No.
But she cares about social media.
I know. I saw a quote from Adam McCain, and basically a lot of people say, like, oh, this is like a one for one. I'm not saying you said this. A lot of people are like, oh, this is a one for one Trump. And he's like the narcissism of Trump, the barely qualified aspect of W, the used car salesman aspect of Clinton, and the comfortable wealth of Obama. I just wanted to, like, take bits and pieces, like the least attractive traits of all these people.
Fair enough. And maybe it's like we see what we want to see. I mean, my brain went with it. But yeah, so she is terrible. Like, the entire White House staff is terrible. Like, you got Leo, Jennifer Lawrence, and then Rob Morgan's character, who's like the head of that, like, weird ass department, are all like, this is happening. It's 100% gonna happen. And Mary's like, oh, you can't say 100%. Like, that's just going to freak people out. Let's just call it 70% and move on. Like, what? And then Leo says some of the effect of, like, it's a 99.87% chance it's going to happen. And Jonah's like, oh, so it's not 100%. Like, what are we talking about here? Which are very real things that I feel like happen, which this movie is very crazy and outlandish, but there are things that happen in it that I think are very real or hit home. And that is, like, something is 99.8%. chance of happening, but then there's a certain type of people out there who just go, well, it's not 100%, what are we talking about? Like, no, I mean, it is, like, mm-hmm. It's scientifically proven, like, it will, whatever. So they get blown off by the White House, and then they leak the story to the press, and that's the first time that Kate and Randall, Mindy, Leo's character, go on TV, and that's the Tyler Perry and Kate Blanchett show, the Rip or whatever it's called. And the whole time you're thinking Leo's going to be terrible in front of the camera, and Kate or Jennifer Lawrence is going to be great, because that's kind of how it's been going in the movie so far. But it kind of flips, and she freaks out in front of the camera, and Leo's great. So then he becomes the popular hot scientist guy, and she becomes the crazy, you know, woman who cried wolf, crazy person. So things are going crazy for a while. Eventually the president brings them in and says, we believe you. Because, like, we had our own scientists look into it. In actuality, it was, like, she's losing in the polls and needs, like, a reason to get good graces with, like, the average normal person, and what's better than saving the world. So they hatched this plan to blow up, or, like, to get rid of the asteroid or the comet, right? And I was like, it's, oh, well, we need a hero. Like, Ron Perlman's going to be the pilot of the shuttle to do this. And I like how Leo's like, shouldn't this be done with, like, drones or remotely? No, Washington always needs a hero.
Yeah.
And Ron Perlman's character is just like, isn't he the guy who was yelling at the kids? And they cut and he's like swearing at kids. And then when he's in the shuttle taking off, he's all like, I want to say to all the hardworking white people out there that, like, I'm here for you. And also for Indians, both the dots and feathers, how come you guys never work together? I always thought that would have been kind of cool. And then he says something like, and to the gays out there, and then someone cuts and goes, hey, let's just keep thinking about the mission. And he's like, okay, yeah. So he's just like a terrible person. But he's going to be the hero. And then, you know, so they do the mission. They have all these probes that go up with him, and none of them explode on takeoff. And Rob Morgan and Leo's character are like, oh, we had a margin of 2. The fact that none of them blew up increases our chance of a successful mission to 81%. Like, we did it. We're doing it. And then this is when Mark Rylance's character gets a little more involved, which, by the way, he's a platinum level donor to the president. And that's why he's allowed in the Situation Room, which is ridiculous to me. Yes. But again, this whole movie is ridiculous. But he basically gets her to stop the mission because he discovered that the comet is full of valuable minerals. So now they want to mine. They stop the shuttle, stop it cold in its tracks. And now their plan is to mine the comet for like trillions of dollars of materials. And then he does this presentation on how they're going to do it. And this is when the movie, I mean, it's ridiculous up to this point. Don't get me wrong. But this is when the movie really starts to skew into the outrageous territory where we're sending up drones that have drills on them. And he's got this elaborate presentation on how it's going to work and happen. It's the most insane thing I've ever seen. And so, like, that presentation happens. Chaos breaks out because, again, Leo and, you know, he's had his little thing with Cate Blanchett. But ends up, he doesn't end it. He just gets caught and then, you know, goes back to his wife. But he starts getting more and more frustrated that no one's listening. And Leo has his big speech or whatever on TV. And it's him unhinged, and he just goes crazy on everything. He just says, like, everyone's a fucking idiot. This is happening. President doesn't know, like, this big speech that goes on. I liked it. It did feel a lot like that was him talking to real life people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just him going off on it. Most of this has been like a metaphor where it's probably hitting you over the head with it, but it's still metaphorical. That's probably the one where it's him just straight up, because he's a big climate change activist, you know, which makes sense why he's in this movie. But that's probably the science is real. This president's a fucking idiot. I feel like I'm going crazy. Why isn't anyone doing anything? I feel like that's his message to, like, real life people. And I liked it, but that's again, maybe people didn't appreciate it because it was very direct. But what else are we going to do at this day and age? So maybe that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Kind of just gives up, like, every other country in the world, that, like, all their missions fail, so the only one left is Bash, which is this technical company that Mark Rylance owns. That's the only mission left, so they all kind of give up, and they're just like, they decide to sit down and have one nice dinner with each other while the Bash mission happens, but of course goes terribly wrong. And then everyone dies, except for the rich people, because it turns out they built a spaceship that takes rich people into space and saves their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of appreciate the ending, though. Like, everyone dies. Like, I get that's the whole point of the movie, is, like, people are just screaming in the air and nothing's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I appreciate it. They just went for it and just said, nah, we're all dying.
Yeah. And I think the best twist about Meryl Streep's character and Mark Rylance is the fact that they're like, oh, well, the drones are going shit, so time for us to leave. Right in the middle of it. And I don't even remember who, but they're like, oh, Madam President, like, where, shit, what's Jonah Hill's character's name? But basically, like, oh, where's your son? She's like, oh,
Jason.
Oh my god. Oh, yeah. I forgot she's about on the, him.
Yeah.
She's so, like, this is a thing about people who only think about themselves. They really, really, truly only do think about themselves. She did not give a shit about anyone else. She loves her son so much.
Maybe too much?
Yes. Which is where I think this is a literal, like, a Trump thing, where Jonah Hill's like, oh, if she wasn't my mother, because Trump has said that about one of his daughters before.
Yeah, it's so weird. Gross.
But no, she loves her son, but not enough to remember him and take him on the little spaceship when the world ends. So he's fucked.
Yeah, he's in, like, post-credit scene where he survives the initial comet, and he's just, like, in a post-apocalyptic world.
I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, it's like the end credit.
Is it after the...
When they land on the planet, yeah. That's literally all it is. It's like he crawls out of the building. He's like, Mom?
Yeah, she left you.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, Jonah Hill, apparently, like, everything was ad-lib, which I believe because he has some very Jonah Hill-esque lines in this movie, which are fucking hilarious. Him and Jennifer Lawrence back and forth is amazing.
Yeah,
because they just hate each other in the, like, their characters hate each other in the movie. Like, when she gets pulled in by the FBI to talk to the president and be told that we're finally going to go with your plan, she gets a bag on her head, and then when she sees Jonah Hill again,
yeah,
he's like, oh, by the way, the CIA do the bag over the head thing, but I asked the FBI to do that to you specifically. So just when you think about it, just know that I did that on purpose. And she's like, yeah, I figured. And he goes, good, because I did. You know, he's got so many good one-liners. Like, when they go over the money, the comet has trillions of dollars. And trillions of dollars worth of minerals on it. And Leo goes, but what the fuck does it matter if we're all going to be dead? Jonah Hill just cuts in. He goes, oh, my God, what if we were rich and alive? Oh, that'd be the worst. Just... He's hilarious. Or when they do the Ron Perlman launch, he goes, oh, fucking time that perfectly. Shrooms are kicking in. So you're just on shrooms in the Situation Room right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's definitely a little creepy with his mom. A lot of look at this smoke show of a president lines, or yeah, if she wasn't my mom, I'd definitely want to bone her. Like, oh, okay, all right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little weird. Yeah, and I mentioned I do think this movie is ridiculous, but there's some, like, real life shit. Like, it may be exaggerated, but real life stuff that I feel like happens in this. Like, there's this argument where Jennifer Lawrence's character is on news with some, I don't know, politician or whoever, and they go, because the comet's named after her because she discovered it, which is another kind of running gag through the movie, but. This person she's arguing with goes, like, what, why are we supposed to believe you? Your name's on the comments. She just, I don't understand the relevance. And they're like, just answer the question. She goes, what question are you asking? I'm like, I feel like that's a real conversation people have. Oh. Present an argument, X person then just comes up with an outlandish statement and then says, answer the question. And it's like, what are you talking about right now? The comet being turned into a political thing, obviously a very real thing. Like, Kate goes back home. She's like, oh, Mom, Dad, I'm so happy to see you. But the door locked, and they're like, we don't want to talk politics while you're home. We are pro-comet. And she's like, this isn't a political thing. It's just literally a comet that's going to kill us. What's political? Like, that's obviously real life. Things getting turned political that shouldn't be political. A company trying to turn the comet into a profit is something I feel like would be very real. the title comes from a hashtag that Meryl Streep comes up with, because at one point in the movie you can literally see the comet in the sky. So then they just start telling people, like, just look up, like, we're not lying, the comet's right there, like, look up. And the title of the movie comes from the hashtag that Meryl Streep starts saying, like, don't look up. Do you know why they want you to look up? So that you're afraid. So, like, I feel like that's, like, a real thing where people create a movement in opposition to something that they don't like, like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I can easily see someone not liking this movie. I just enjoyed it a lot and thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Do I think it should have been nominated for Best Picture? I mean, I like that.
I was surprised. But I didn't like it as much as I wanted to. So that was just a personal thing. Like, I don't know if I really liked this movie.
The only reason I guess I'm not surprised is that Hollywood does like taking a stance on things. The argument is whether people think they should or shouldn't. So this does feel like a movie that like Hollywood would get behind, but then I saw the critic response and I was very surprised by that. I just really enjoyed it. Mark Rylance is great in it. He plays a creepy head of the tech company who is a terrible person. And
I actually really liked his character too, now that I think more about it. Because he was just that perfect creepy.
He just talks weird. He had like fake teeth in, I assume.
He just talked, you know, in a little bit of a sing-songy, like quiet voice. It was just like, oh my God.
When his plan, his drones are blowing up, he's just, this is fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, you're right.
Just, I was assured that we can, it would succeed with 24 drones. And they're just like, how many more can we afford to lose? He goes, how many more? And he's just, oh, nature calls. I have to go to the bathroom real quick. And he just gets up and leaves. And then the post-credit scene that you are thinking of that we did see was like 23,000 years in the future. And they land on a planet. And he's just like, oh, we had a 58% success rate with the pods, which is way higher than expected. And Meryl's like, yeah, we only had 47 people die in our section. What the fuck is happening?
Cool.
Yep. His app can predict when you die, and that was like a little callback.
How you're going to die.
Yeah, which wasn't true for Leo, but then was right for Meryl. Yeah. So, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's on Netflix. I enjoyed it, but I could definitely see how someone wouldn't. So yeah, that's, I guess, Don't Look Up for you. I would say like these two that we reviewed today are probably the bottom two of Best Picture nominee. I mean, we haven't finished. There's two more that we need to see at the time of recording, but they're definitely the two that I think I was surprised to see that they got Best Picture nominations.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So that's the show today. Make sure to follow us on social media at Oscar Real Pod on Twitter, on the Instagram, or on the line. Exchange-a-gram. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. If you're on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I guess it's called these days. When was the last time it was called iTunes? I don't know why I said that. But on Apple Podcasts.
You freaking millennial. You and your iTunes.
You calm down, you boomer at heart, you. leave us a review and a rating. Help us out. The more you listen, the more you review, the higher we climb in the charts. And it's almost nothing on your end. You just click that five-star button, and it helps us out immensely. Also, check out my YouTube channel. I've been posting. I'm going to post like snippets of reviews and stuff on there to check out, too. So, yeah, from Matt and Haley, this has been the Oscar Real Movie Podcast.